stuff we're sending skyward isn't going all the way. Just floating like a blanket underneath that we all lay. And welcome back to the Green Front. It's a busy news week with the inauguration of President Obama and his mentioning climate change in his inauguration speech. And by the way, I watched a lot of the follow-up on that, and just about every host on all the cable shows, reporters mentioned how surprising it was that he actually talked about climate change. So not only did it get brought up initially, but it got a lot of conversation going, or at least relative to prior climate conversation going. So that's a really exciting and encouraging development. But of course, as Brad Johnson said, we need to now keep the pressure on, mount the volume, raise the volume, mount the pressure so that he continues to feel that there is muscle behind the movement and that we're, quote, making him do it, to use the president's words. Well, the governor of Nebraska has done it. He has okayed the Keystone XL route of the pipeline going through that state, and there's a group that's been fighting very hard to oppose that. We're going to get their response right now. Very pleased to welcome to the Green Front Benjamin Gottschall. He is the energy director of Bold Nebraska. Hey, Benjamin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So you're probably not very happy. Are you surprised?
Not necessarily surprised, and not very happy.
I can imagine.
The governor's decision is a complete reversal of his basic plea to the president to deny the pipeline route or the pipeline permit through Nebraska. And really the only thing that's changed is now they're crossing more miles of the Ogallala Aquifer than they were with their original route through Nebraska.
Is that right? I thought that part had been taken out. So they're still going to be in that sensitive area?
Yes, they're going through many sensitive areas, including areas defined as the sand hills on some maps, just not the maps that TransCanada convinced our state DEQ to use to define the sand hills. So still going through sand hills, still going through many areas of sandy soils and shallow water tables, just like the sand hills, still crossing the aquifer, only more of it now.
Now, Governor Dave Heineman is saying that the effects of any spill would be localized. That's why there is no need for concern. Why is that not necessarily the case? How can that be very damaging locally?
Governor Heineman has now used TransCanada's talking points almost verbatim. The same talking points that Americans for Prosperity and other fake grassroots organizations are using in our state to try to convince people of the safety of this project. A study done by Canada shows that contaminants found in the tar sands in Canada can travel up to 55 miles and contaminate waterways, water bodies. Localized as a term is a relative term. To the people who live in these communities or these small towns or anywhere where you've had a disaster like a pipeline spill, localized doesn't really mean anything, because it pretty much ruins your water supply. It can ruin your livelihood. It can ruin your community. So it's one of those words that doesn't mean anything, but it's supposed to make us feel better.
And there's another phrase that, if you know more of the facts, doesn't really mean much, and that's what the opponents to, well, the proponents, the supporters of the pipeline, say is, you know, this is going to bring jobs to America, and they talk about, you know, thousands and thousands of jobs being created, and this would get us off energy dependence. Why is that not exactly factually correct?
Well, the pipeline's not going to build itself. Somebody's going to have to do it, and they're going to hire people to build it. The thing that they've never done is they've never been honest with our lawmakers. They've never been honest with our elected officials. They've never been honest with the public about just how many jobs that this will create. Almost every time they announce any kind of jobs numbers, it's been spun to the maximum optimism level. Even some of the folks who helped develop those numbers don't say they should be used for any kind of practical planning purposes. Basically, their jobs numbers are nothing more than advertisements, and it's very disappointing to see our governor taking them as fact and using them as the basis for his decision.
Mm.
So what happens next? Is this, you know, going to go to President Obama directly? Is there some kind of environmental impact statement that's needed from the State Department first?
As I understand it, yes, the State Department will release an environmental impact statement that will be revised to reflect the Nebraska information. President Obama will be in charge of making the presidential permit decision. But to bring things back to Nebraska, the fight's not over here in our state. We actually have a lawsuit pending in our court system that would challenge the authority of Governor Heineman's decision. And challenges the constitutionality of the law that gave him that decision-making power. The state tried to get that lawsuit thrown out. It was not thrown out. Multiple counts of it were upheld, and we're going to continue to see how that progresses. And yes, we will focus on the president, we will focus on that process, and we will focus on organizing landowners to make sure that they are not abused by TransCanada land agents who will use the threats of eminent domain in order to secure property and land rights for their project.
What about TransCanada's alleged promise to carry a $200 million third-party liability insurance plan to cover any cleanup costs in the event there is an incident?
Well, I would say that's nice, but the $200 million is a drop in the bucket for a major oil spill. The Enbridge spill in Kalamazoo, Michigan, or in Marshall, Michigan, in the Kalamazoo River watershed is up to over $800 million right now. And so the insurance, you know, while it's a nice gesture, it's really nothing more than an attempt to, you know, to buy goodwill. When we know that, in fact, they don't pay into the oil spill liability trust fund, which other oil carriers must pay into, because technically tar sands is not classified as crude oil by the IRS or by Congress, and so they are conveniently able to avoid paying that tax. That tax is used to fund cleanup efforts, so even if they do have that little bit of insurance, the money that will go to paying for cleanup has got to come from somewhere, and once the $200 million is maxed out, where is it going to come from?
And why is tar sand oil not considered crude?
Because it is, well, that's a good question. My opinion is because it's derived from diluted bitumen, and it's not classified as crude because the tar sands industry doesn't want it to be classified as crude for the reason I just mentioned. They save a lot of money. It's basically a big tax subsidy that they don't have to pay, and so they don't want it to be classified as crude, but they want us to think it's crude, just like conventional crude coming from, say, North Dakota. When, you know, they want to make us believe that it's the same thing, that there's no risks, that it's something that's been around for forever, and you know, that there's really no problems with it. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to have it both ways, basically.
Exactly, and they're, you know, the proponents, the oil companies, are saying that this does not have a bigger. Remember those ads running about a year ago that tar sands oil does not have a larger ecological or, you know, energy footprint than other traditional methods of extracting oil. Why is that not accurate either?
Well, look at Canada. Tell that to the people who live up where this oil is extracted. Those people are having serious problems up there, and they are fighting this just as much as we are here in Nebraska, and in fact, we are joining with them in full force. We will be having a rally here on Monday, the 28th, and we are right now actually in northern Nebraska at the Fort Randall Casino Hotel. There is a Protect the Sacred gathering of citizens from Nebraska, South Dakota, all over, really, and Native American tribal leaders and folks up there to talk about this and just to discuss what we're going to do, and we're getting together. And so All along this route from Texas to Canada, or from Canada to Texas, however you want to look at it, folks are fighting this, and it's not because they don't know that it's that it's safe. It's because they absolutely know that it's not safe.
And will Bold Nebraska be represented in Washington on February 17th? I believe it's President's Day at the big Keystone protest at the White House.
Yes, I will be going. We've got well over a dozen folks that have committed to going a long time ago. We'll probably end up having a couple or several dozen folks from Nebraska going, especially now that the governor made his decision. We will have a couple of folks that will be probably getting arrested for civil disobedience who have not taken that action before but feel that it's important enough to do so now. So, we'll be there.
Great. Just to wrap up, what about James Hansen's infamous line that if the tar sands project goes ahead, it will be game over for the climate? That's a pretty profound quote that he continues to repeat.
Yes.
Why is that not really making a difference or enough of a difference?
You know, I don't know. I hope he's wrong, but I'm going to act like he's right. I think that folks are getting distracted by the argument of whether or not humans have caused climate change. Well, to me, that's an irrelevant argument. It doesn't matter whether we caused it or not. It's happening. And the only question that we need to answer is, what are we going to do to try to stop it? I would be glad to be wrong in saying that we didn't cause it, but I would really like to be right in saying that we can do something to stop it, slow it down, reverse it.
Benjamin, what's the history, briefly, of Bold Nebraska? Were you organized around this issue in particular, or were there other issues, both environmental and perhaps none?
No, Bold Nebraska was not created to tackle environmental issues. It just kind of became that way because it became an important issue in our state. We have a very small staff, our executive director, Jane Kleb, myself, a couple interns that help us here and there, and a lot of volunteers. And we just kind of are a small, nimble group that we want to branch out and discuss other important issues to our state. But, we're focused on the pipeline right now because it's kind of been we've been the lead organization on this in our state, and we've had the good fortune working with a lot of other great organizations in our state that have really helped us out, and we wouldn't be anywhere without them.
So is there a pretty active environmental community in Nebraska?
I would
getting
say
more so perhaps because of this pipeline. Might that be a silver or green
I would
lining?
Say there is now, although I don't think that all the folks that work with us would label themselves as environmentalists. I think they're just farmers, ranchers, small town residents who are standing up for their rights, and it just so happens to be an environmental issue.
As well as health and perhaps economic as well.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Ben Gottschall. Really appreciate your joining us from Bold, Nebraska. Sorry that it's in response to the news that the governor has okayed the Keystone Pipeline running through Nebraska, but as you said, it's not over yet. So keep up the good fight.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back in just a moment to find out which cities ranked highest in terms of number and quality of its green buildings.